Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org each and every week, streaming live, or if you've missed shows, you can tap the podcasts that are available there under local programming. Just look for Your Financial Choices. You can also share that information with your friends and family who are outside of our listening area. Today is October 17, 2018. The markets were down a little bit today. The Dow closing at 25,706, the S&P at 2809, and the NASDAQ at 7642. That seems to be what they do, up and down, up and down. Our topic tonight is essential components of an estate plan, and I have a guest this evening, and I'll introduce him shortly. We are live tonight. We will take your questions, but with the phone system being diverted to the pledge drive, we're not going to take live calls this evening, but you can still call in. Lori C. will still answer the calls at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. She'll just write the question down and bring it in to us, and we'll do the best we can to answer your calls. I typically do have a topic each week, but you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. So if you have questions, again, you can call in. Just give those to Lori, and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. I do just want to take a brief moment myself to thank everyone who has called in and made a pledge to WDIY. It's very important to all of us who are here and spend a lot of time volunteering, and we really, really appreciate it. We like this station, want to keep it going, and continue to appreciate the support. And I hear people cheering in the background, so thanks again. So my guest this evening is attorney Dennis Pappas of Vasiliadis Pappas Associates. Dennis, as he goes by, practices exclusively in the areas of elder law, trust and estate planning, trust and estate administration, special needs planning, and veterans pension benefits planning. He's admitted to practice law in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. He's a graduate of the Temple University Beasley School of Law and received his undergraduate degree in political science from Temple University. Mr. Pappas is a VA accredited attorney for the preparation, presentation, and prosecution of claims for veterans benefits before the Department of Veterans Affairs. He frequently lectures and teaches and is a frequent guest of ours. Welcome back, Dennis.
Great to be back, Lori.
Thank you. I really appreciate this, the contributions you make, and my listeners love listening to you as well. You're a teacher by nature, I think, almost as much as an attorney, because that's how I met you, and you continue to provide information that people can understand, and it helps, I think, that process, especially when we talk about estate planning, right?
Absolutely. And I wanted to say, too, just to start off, I always feel like when I come in, you always have this natural energy that I feed off of, and we've talked about that. And coming in today and hearing the applause and all the money that's been raised, and they hit their goal and then some. It's just the energy in here is amazing. I wish people at home could see all the people working hard back here. So it seems like a really great day today. I'm glad I came in.
That's great. Thank you for that. As I mentioned, our topic tonight is essential components of an estate plan. So we want to talk about what an estate plan is, but we're actually coming up on our first break because we took a few minutes of the beginning of the show to get those extra donations so we could get that challenge. We really welcomed our new executive director by accepting the challenge he put out there. So our listeners really came through for that. But this is going to be a great show, folks. We're uninterrupted for the rest of the hour with pledging because you all came through. So Hang on, stay tuned. Dennis is awesome. We're talking about a complicated subject for a lot of people that scares them. We're going to make it easy and approachable. So stay tuned. Come back for Essential Components of an Estate Plan. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about the essential components of an estate plan this evening with our good friend, attorney Dennis Pappas of Vassiliotis Pappas Associates. So, Dennis, let's first talk about what is an estate plan. What would you call that?
I'm going to give you the formal answer first because I always like to tease, and then we'll talk in our regular everyday language. But probably if we looked it up, it would be something along the lines of the process of arranging one's affairs during life and after death. You know, it's like the law school answer. But, you know, really, what are we talking about? We're talking about making a roadmap. We're talking about leaving a set of instructions. We're talking about gathering our thoughts, being organized, and making some conscious decisions. It's not just about the documents. I think too often, and we've talked about this in the past, for the listeners that have heard some of these topics, it's not just the documents. It's about how that sausage gets made. What are the goals? What are our needs? Some of the traditional goals people think about are certainly taxes and inheritance. Some other items that we discuss from time to time are, what about if I need long-term care? What happens if a loved one ends up in a nursing home? What happens if we have special needs, a child or an adult who has a physical or a mental incapacity? What happens if we have family members who might have certain red flags, rocky marriages, looming divorces, spendthrift habits, substance abuse? How do we make a plan to deal with the inheritance for those persons? What happens if we don't have family or friends to serve as members of our estate plan? And we'll talk about the various roles. I don't have somebody to serve as an agent under power of attorney. I don't have somebody to be my executor. So it's trying to help clients identify what are their goals, what are their needs, and how can we put this in a nice package that makes it easier for the next person in line to pick it up. And when I say the next person in line, all too often, it's not just about death. We'll talk about that. But it's, what about during our lifetimes, if we have a physical or mental incapacity, whether it's permanent or temporary, how are we going to make it easier for somebody to step into our shoes and continue to take care of all these goals and needs that we have? I think to me that's generally what an estate plan means.
Well, I think that we should propose a new word for it, because everything you just described was really taking care of our loved ones in any number of capacities and situations. And I think too often people say, oh, estate planning, and they, you know, are paralyzed and can't seem to move forward with it. When we think that half the population doesn't have documents, and I'm making this up, there's not a study. I'm sure there's a study in the past, but I can't quote one right now. But you hear about half the population not having, their documents in order. Well, how can we, as professionals, make that easier for them? And when you explain it like you just did, it's really about taking care of people. And there's always some, I would say some struggle sometimes in navigating that, but that's why we have attorneys to help you navigate those and answer those questions. So let's talk about what are the components, the essential components. You mentioned documents. So let's talk about some of the essential components and then take a deep dive into what each of those mean or what's entailed or involved in that.
So I think what I like to call, and I think we've called it this on the show before, the core four. There's four documents generally that make up the nucleus of a good estate plan: last will and testament, a financial power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney, and a living will. Beyond that, that's when we can start to talk about, are there other issues that require a certain type of trust? Do we need to think about either a pre- or a post-nuptial agreement if this is a second marriage situation? Do we need to talk about family caregiver contracts if one family member is providing care to maybe an older family member? But that's getting beyond the nucleus. And so when we talk about an estate plan, I think the foundation of that, the frame of that house, the foundation of that house is those, the core four documents that, that we just mentioned. I wanted to go back quickly. You mentioned, you know, people get apprehensive, they get anxious when talking about the estate plan. And I think their mind is racing to what documents do I need and what assets do I have? And I think a lot of times the best way to start the estate plan, what I like is, I tell the clients, don't open any of your documents you brought in. Don't pull out your financials and your tax returns. Just keep it all in your bag. And just fundamentally, small talk. After you pass away, what would you like to happen to your estate? If you were incapacitated, if you were sick or ill, who do you trust most with your life to step in? And I think if you just approach it in those everyday terms, forget taxes and trusts and all this mumbo jumbo, what do you want? And I think once the client tells us what they want, now we can come back and say, well, okay, well, now we need a trust and you need this will and you need this power of attorney. But don't focus on the details of the documents in the beginning. I think that's a backwards way of doing that. But core four documents: will, financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and a living will. One thing I'll mention on that, because there might be people at home saying, oh my God, I don't have four documents. I have three. Recognize that there's no one way to do this. There are some attorneys, for example, who take the financial power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney and they smush it into one document. That's okay. That's just a stylistic thing. So fundamentally, you might not have four documents, but it's, I like to say four because it's really four tools. If we're going to open up our toolbox, you want to have four tools, no matter if they're all smushed together or not. So will, a financial power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney, and a living will, that's really the foundation.
So you had mentioned, you know, putting the financials away a little bit, kind of making people comfortable, talking about really just theoretically, what would you like? So you ask them some questions. Do you give them a checklist ahead of time? Do you just wait till they come in your office and start asking questions then? What does that process look like for someone? And is that scary as well? Or do you do it in such a way that it makes it pretty straightforward if you just kind of follow the breadcrumbs?
I don't think there's a cookie cutter answer to that. And because we're not all cookie cutter people. And so I'll give you what we do at our office, at our firm. But I recognize that might not be appropriate for everybody. There's a couple considerations here. First of all, if someone's never met you, they're apprehensive about disclosing a lot of information. And I get that. So the process that I'm about to go through, again, might not be appropriate for everybody. But typically, if a client calls the office and they say, we want a will, we want an estate plan, one of our paralegals will do a little pre-phone screening, 5-10 minutes, you know, get the basic biographical information, get some financial information, healthcare information, and then they'll schedule them for an appointment. We'll also then send out a letter. The appointment's coming up in 2 weeks, and we'll send them what's called a profile, maybe 3 or 4 pages of, can you please sketch out how many children do you have, any health issues, briefly your finances. So that way we have a sketch. The nice thing about that is when the client comes in for that first conference, if they do bring in that profile, and we also tell them in the letter, please bring in tax returns, existing documents if you have them, deeds. We really want them to bring in all those documents. When they come in, it's very easy for me to then have that conversation because, number one, I think they're invested. It's very difficult if someone says, Dennis, I want to do an estate plan. And I say, okay, we have to have a conversation about some of these topics. And they say, well, don't worry about my assets. Don't worry about my income. I have 3 kids. I just want a will, 3 kids in equal shares. You know, can you do it? I don't think I could do that. And I'm not trying to be evasive or a lawyer, you know, give the lawyer answer. But to really do a good estate plan, it's not only about the documents. It's What's the family structure? What are the issues? So, yeah, that's our screening process is designed, and the questions we ask are designed to try to figure out, do they have any of these special things?
Okay, then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what those specific documents are going to help our folks with. If you have questions, you still can call in. We're not taking live on-air calls, but you certainly can call in our regular number and talk to Lori C., and she'll write the question down and bring it into us. And that is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And we have in the studio with us attorney Dennis Pappas of Vassiliadis Pappas Associates, and we are talking about the essential components of an estate plan. Dennis mentioned in our last segment the core four, typically will, power of financial power of attorney, health power of attorney, and living will. And that's just part of the toolbox. There are many other ways to use those tools. So that's why we need to talk to an attorney who's going to do somewhat of an fact-finding session with you, get more information to kind of know what those tools would be for you and how to use those tools. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Lori C. will write the question down and bring it into the studio, and we'll do our best to answer it. So, Dennis, it's kind of like a fact-finding that you're doing. You're getting to know your client when they come in. You know they're invested. That's very important. I agree completely with you. It's in financial services, we have that too. Sometimes people want to give you one piece of the puzzle because they don't realize how all the other pieces fit together. And it's really important to develop that trust. And even with attorneys, sometimes you might get a referral to an attorney. Sometimes people go look you up on their own and they might not really know you. Can you quickly just tell me, I know that you have that special, first of all, you were like a rising star, 40 under 40 at the time. You've done education seminars, which I was very impressed with many, many years ago. And your firm has a specialty in elder planning as well. And don't you do seminars too as well?
We do. So we have two more seminars coming up in October, which is nice because we talk about a lot of these issues in a nice, relaxed setting. On Tuesday, October the 23rd at 10 a.m. and Wednesday, October the 24th at 7 p.m. So we do a 10 a.m. on the 23rd and a 7 p.m. on the 24th at our firm in Bethlehem Township at our office. It's a great way to come and see.
And is that on the website too? What's your website?
It's also on the website at www.lawvp.com. That's law, V as in Vassiliadis, P as in Pappas.com.
Okay. So lots of experience there, and estate planning is one of your areas in particular. So we were just talking about doing that fact-finding, and from that fact-finding, a will is one of those four core four basic documents. So in a will, which can have any number of provisions, what are some of the basic provisions that's going to allow your loved ones after you're gone to take care of your business? What's it going to do for you?
So broad strokes, the first thing we want to make sure that the audience understand is the will is only when somebody passes away. It has no significance, essentially, during life. We want to pick an executor. Who is the person that you trust that's going to be able to work with the attorney, with the financial advisor, with the accountant to make sure that the bills are paid, the taxes are paid, the will is honored, and the money goes ultimately to the beneficiaries that you choose. Anybody can be an executor. You can choose a natural person, could be a family member. What happens if you don't have a trusted family member, a friend to serve? There are professional fiduciaries. There are trust companies, banks that will agree to serve as executors. Certainly they would take a commission for that. So that's a thought if you don't have somebody to serve in that capacity. It's also a good idea to have a backup. So I might say I do have, for example, a son who could serve as the executor. He's my only child. If something ever happened to him, I would like to name XYZ Bank as the backup. So it's always good to have a backup just in case something happens. Another component of the will is, well, who are your beneficiaries? And this is really where you spend a lot of time, not only on, well, who are your beneficiaries, but what are the issues surrounding them? Are the issues minors? Well, maybe we don't want to give an inheritance directly to a minor. We want a minor's trust to hold those assets until they could be responsible. We talked about certain red flags, rocky marriage. We don't want to leave an inheritance to somebody who potentially might get divorced because the money would be at risk. What happens if you have a child or a beneficiary who might have creditors, a doctor, a lawyer, a contractor? They get sued frequently. You might not want to leave a direct inheritance. So you want to go through the analysis of who are the beneficiaries, what are the relationship like amongst the beneficiaries. You might ask, for example, do you anticipate anybody challenging your will? So those are the types of issues we get into with as far as beneficiaries. Do you have a beneficiary with special needs? Yeah, you know what? My child is autistic. He's getting Medicaid benefits. If he gets an inheritance, he's going to get kicked off. And I just had this case today. This is pretty common. And just as a quick aside, I see far too often the will not include the special needs child. And they'll say, well, I have three children. One is special needs. I'm going to leave the inheritance to the other two children, and they're going to take care of their brother. And I tell them, well, if we leave an inheritance to the other children, what happens if one or both of them die before the special needs child? They get divorced and that money's at risk. So special needs trusts are really great tools that we can use to help our special needs population. Another issue we might talk about is a tax clause. You know, very quickly, how many times, Laura, you see this? I'd like to leave $5,000 to my grandson. And I say, well, do you want to leave $5,000 to them before or after tax? Mm-hmm. In Pennsylvania, grandchildren pay a 4.5% inheritance tax. Well, what's the grandparent really mean? I want my grandkid to get 5%, $5,000. Mm-hmm. Well, what they're saying is we want the tax paid out of the estate, which means the other beneficiaries are going to get a little less money so that that grandchild can get $5,000. You need to have that conversation, because if it's not clear that you had that conversation with the client on how the taxes are going to be paid, you're going to have some other disgruntled beneficiaries, and we like to call them potential plaintiffs. Those are the people that are going to be upset and say, hey, Dennis, did you talk to grandmom about this? How do we know how those taxes are supposed to get paid? So a couple concepts. I think we have some maybe questions coming in. But so executor, beneficiaries, tax clause. And then another big area I would say is if you have minor children, who's going to be the guardian? So if you have minor children who are under the age of 18, for example, who will stand in the shoes of being the parent? It's very important to name these people will be the guardians. Is it going to be the grandparents? Is it going to be siblings, nephews? So it's very important with minor children to also name the guardian. So that's really kind of a broad, very, very general broad stroke of thoughts about when we're drafting a will, what to include in that. And we haven't even touched, you know, what happens if a client has high net worth, they have, you know, multi-millions of dollars, there's other tax issues. So, But I think generically that those are probably very quickly what we want to talk about with the will.
You're right. A question did come in, and Albert from Akunji called in a question. And Albert, if you just hang on until after the break, I want to be able to give your question enough time. So we'll answer that question after the break. But I just want to go back to what you were talking about, Dennis, all those questions you're asking for the will. What kind of beneficiary? Do we have any unforeseen circumstances, beneficiaries that might have some issues? Minors trust. Some people don't realize that you can put those trust provisions in a will. Quite often people say, do I have to have a trust? Do I have to have a trust? Well, they might not need that trust during their lifetime. There are cases where they might, but there are cases where they might not. And you can do that in the will, that it would get triggered in the event ABC, whatever people, you know, decide. I tell folks, you know, they say you can't control from the grave, but with really good estate planning, you actually can. So we want to make sure that people understand there's so many different provisions, and we're just touching on them tonight. There is so much more, but that's why we work with professionals who understand the ins and outs and try to help you navigate all that is available to you. folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions, please, the number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And Albert, please hang on. We're going to answer your question as soon as we come back from this next break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 57. Tonight, low around 35. Thursday, sunny with a high near 46. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 34. Leading into your weekend, Friday, Sunday, sunny with a high near 56. Friday night, showers likely with a low around 47. Saturday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 59. Saturday night, low around 40. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 48. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 33. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. We have in the studio with us this evening attorney Dennis Pappas of Vasiliadis Pappas Associates, and we are talking about the essential components of an estate plan. Sorry, Dennis's chair just fell, made me laugh. And we had a question from Albert Imakunji, and he admits that it is a little complicated, but is hoping for any tips that we might be able to give him. And here's the question. His in-laws have overseas properties in their name, but they also live here too. So let's assume they're either residents of this country or citizens of this country. How will the European properties affect estate planning? Now, is it his in-laws estate planning or his estate planning? So there's a couple nuances to this. So Dennis, if you want to take a stab at that, I can throw in some comments as well.
I mean, I think it would be both. First of all, I think it would be a good idea to talk to the in-laws and make sure their estate plan is set up correctly. And then if the in-laws intend to pass those properties to Albert and his wife, it would be a good idea to be prepared to receive those properties. On the other hand, it's going to be hard to give you a specific question because a lot of that will depend on what European country. I will say generically, I mean, we have clients who are in this situation, you know, United States citizens. I happen to have a lot of Greek clients where this situation happens. And what I would say is there would not be any United States tax implications. So the estate plan, we would have the will. We would want to make sure we identify the properties. We'd have to see to the European side what would be the inheritance tax implications on that side. Pennsylvania, the state laws for Pennsylvania indicate that if you have real estate outside of Pennsylvania, it is not subject to Pennsylvania inheritance tax. So the nice thing is we don't have a Pennsylvania inheritance tax. So maybe we want to talk to our counterpart in that European country, something we do all the time. Where's the property located? Let's call a trust and estate planning attorney over there and see if there's anything we need to do. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. So hopefully it's a European country where things are pretty simple and you don't have to do too much additional planning.
And then, Albert, I would just add, sometimes you also want to understand what the goal of is for those properties. Is it that they are to be retained? And that does, you know, if they're just like summer vacation, family gathering places, that kind of thing, and it's not an investment property, that probably also makes it a little bit easier if you're talking about these properties being investment properties and or a potential sale before the in-laws pass away. Then if it means there would be income reportable from a foreign country and you have U.S. residents, there's a certain kind of tax reporting requirement you have for that property. And if in lieu of retaining the properties, they decide to sell them and then bring money over, and or at their death they're sold and you're bringing money over, then there might be some additional estate kind of filing requirements that you might have to do, certain reports of certain dollar amounts that come into this country from foreign entities or estates.
But I mean, I think fundamentally Albert's question goes to the topic today of saying, look, it's not just about the core four. That's great.
Right.
Hopefully Albert and his in-laws have the core four, but it's okay. Now we have these specific issues and you just have to dig in and do a little bit of homework.
Yeah. Very good, Dennis. So Albert, I hope
great
that
question.
Helped. So we were talking about wills and all the different elements of a will. Let's quickly, you mentioned a will doesn't happen until someone passes away. Let's quickly talk about powers of attorney, healthcare and financial, and then we'll move into some of these other aspects of estate planning and putting it all together.
Yeah, I think in my opinion, in many cases, not all, the power of attorney document is more important than the will. And when I say that, I think a lot of people look at me like I'm crazy. And I always like to ask people, if you pass away and you don't have a will, what happens? Now, I like to ask that question because I get to show off. But invariably, what most clients say is, well, my money's going to go to the state. And you and I, Lori, know, and we've talked on the show before, that's not what happens. There's a certain set of regulations. The official term is the intestate laws indicate that, no, it's going to go to the closest living blood relatives. So if there's parents, siblings, children, et cetera. If you don't have a power of attorney, however, if I don't have a power of attorney and I become physically or mentally incapacitated during my lifetime, I can't cut checks. I can't pay my bills. I can't call my IRA or 401k company and make decisions maybe that have to be made. I need to trigger my RMD elections, right? I have a problem because there's no default. There's no safety net in the law that says, well, if you don't have a power of attorney, there's no line of people that can step in. If I don't have a power of attorney and I'm incapacitated and I'm going to stay incapacitated, effectively my only legal option is that someone's going to have to go into court and petition the judge to have me legally declared incapacitated. And the judge would appoint a guardian, probably would appoint a family member. I effectively have lost all rights of self-determination. The court is basically saying, just like you have a minor child can't sign a contract. They can't do things legally. If I'm adjudicated incapacitated, I can't do that. The problem there becomes with the guardianship, it can be expensive to go into court and get a guardianship. It's very emotional. I would be there. There'd be medical testimony. My family would be there. And I would be sitting there listening, basically, testimony that I don't have the capacity to make these decisions. So it's a very emotional, it could be a costly process. The other thing is once you're a guardian, any time that the guardians want to do something, they have to go in to get court permission. So there's this continued court oversight down the line. That could be cumbersome. It could be intrusive. You know, many people do not want government judicial oversight of what's happening. So a power of attorney is really important to have it, number one. So hopefully, you know, people take that and understand the importance of what not having a power of attorney means. Number two, they're not all created equal. This is not, and I get this call all the time, even from some attorney friends who are not estate planning attorneys. You know, maybe they do some type of litigation. Dennis, you know, I just need a power of attorney for my client. Can you email me a power of attorney quick? It's like, you know, no, I can't, because they're not all created equal. A power of attorney, an agent under power of attorney. So first of all, if a power of attorney is the document and I'm the principal and I name an agent. So if I'm the principal and I'm signing a power of attorney document and I name Lori, you're my agent under the power of attorney. People might be familiar with the term attorney in fact. That was kind of under the old law. Same thing, agent under power of attorney. You, Lori, as the agent for me under power of attorney, you can only do what's in that document. So if it says you can sign checks, you can sign checks. If it doesn't say you can't sign checks, you can't sign checks. So what happens, unfortunately, is laws change. These power of attorney laws are constantly changing. There's litigation, new court cases come up, the legislature makes changes. So it's important, just because you have a power of attorney, if you have a power of attorney that's 10, 15, 20 years old, you really got to get it looked at, because you see, and I know you talk on your show a lot, look how much more sophisticated financial administration has become. Mm-hmm. I mean, the prevalence of a lot of these non-probate assets, IRAs, 401ks, annuities, stuff that didn't exist 50, 100 years ago. So as society is changing, the power of attorney law is in react mode. And so the laws are trying to catch up. So make sure you have that. What about multiple agents? You can name multiple agents. So I name my dear friend Lori and I name my partner George. I can name them jointly. You both must be in the same place at the same time and sign off on everything. I name my dear friend Lori and my partner George as joint and several agents, one or the other. That's a lot more flexible now. So that's a consideration when you have multiple agents. How are you going to do that? What happens if I don't have an agent? I don't have anybody to serve as my agent. This becomes a little tricky, and this involves some additional estate planning. We're not going to get into it today, but we have clients who don't have family. They don't have friends. They don't have somebody they could trust. It might not even be that. They might be in an older generation where everybody is, you know, if you're 85 years old and everybody you know is 95, maybe they're not appropriate to serve as your agent. So maybe we talk about setting up some type of a trust and getting a bank involved, because if I become incapacitated and I don't have an agent, we talked about that, someone's going to have to go into court. So maybe we want to set up a backup plan where I could have a trust. Maybe a bank is the trustee. My assets get transferred to this trust. And now it's kind of like a substitute power of attorney. Mm-hmm. Really important concept. So that's on the financial side of things. On the healthcare side of things, same concept. I'm physically or mentally incapacitated. Who's going to sign me in and out of a hospital? Who's going to sign me in and out of a nursing home? Who's going to hire and fire caregivers if I have them coming into the house? Who has the authority to access my medical records? Who's going to cut through that HIPAA red tape? So I want to be able to appoint one or more agents, joint and several. What happens if I don't have an agent? Financial institution won't want to be your agent under healthcare power of attorney. There are healthcare organizations that are out there. Some are nonprofit, some are for-profit, that you can name to say, look, if I can't communicate with the doctor to make my own healthcare decisions, then this is the organization. Maybe, Lori, you're the only person I know in the world. You're my primary agent, but I still want to have that institution, that organization as the backup. Again, redundancy. So financial power of attorney and the healthcare power of attorney are there specifically in the event that I can't make those important financial or healthcare decisions. I have a backup plan, a roadmap, a set of instructions so that it's very clear what my agent under financial power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney could do. We at our firm split the financial power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney in two separate documents rather than smush them together. Here's why. That's our preference, not a legal requirement, but a preference. Number one, I might want to name different agents. Mm-hmm. I trust you, Lori, with finances because you're awesome. You have your own radio show. Everybody knows you. You're an expert. You're going to handle my finances. But I trust my third cousin, Michael. We have the same religious, ethical beliefs. When it comes time to pulling the plug, I know that he's going to coincide with that. And I know we have a professional relationship, but maybe you and I have never talked about my religious, ethical, moral beliefs. So I like having the separate documents, partly because you might have different agents, also partly to make it easier for the professionals and that are using these documents. Right. If I come to you and I say, Lori, I have a client, I'm the power of attorney, here's a 40-page document and half of it's healthcare mumbo jumbo, you're not really going to appreciate having to dig through that power of attorney. Or if I go to my doctor, they're not going to want to see 15 pages of financial mumbo jumbo. So part of that is also an ease of use and segregating and siloing those tools, because they're really two different tools.
It also makes it more obvious that what you have when we're talking about those core four documents, you know you have them. Really quickly, before we go to our next break, I want to touch on something with the powers of attorney. You gave a great overview and summary of that. Really phenomenal. I want to go back to an assumption that some people make, if we can touch on quickly. Quite often when we have married couples, they will say, everything is going to my spouse. Why do I need anything? Or even if something happens to them, they also think their spouse can do everything and take care of everything. I have seen where there are spouses who have kept separate assets. Talk for a moment about that assumption not being a good one to rely on.
Number one, I agree with you. More and more spouses have separate assets. What are the biggest ones? Retirement assets. You cannot own an IRA or a 401k jointly. So if one spouse is incapacitated, husband's in the nursing home, and the wife needs to administer that account. Beneficiaries need to be changed. RMD elections need to be made. The account needs to be closed. The account needs to be rolled over. Whatever the case is, just because you're the spouse, you have no authority over that account, and you're not going to be able to do anything. Even if it's joint property, though, let's use that example. We have this in the elder law context when we do planning, when clients, one or both clients are in a nursing home. Classic married planning is, if there's a jointly owned home and one spouse is in the nursing home, we want to retitle the house with the new deed into the healthy spouse's name alone. Well, even if the house is in joint names, if I'm the healthy spouse, I can sign for myself, but if you're the institutional spouse in the nursing home and I need to get your name off of the deed, I cannot sign for you. That's a joint asset. Well, why can't I sign? I'm the spouse. Because you need to have some type of legal authority that says you are the person that has been appointed to make that decision. So a joint deed is a classic example of something that's jointly owned where a power of attorney is imperative, because you're going to have to even record that power of attorney at the courthouse.
This is great information. And as we had people race into their phones to help with our pledge drive, I hope people are racing to their calendars and phones to call and make appointments with their attorneys to do their estate planning. Folks, if you have questions, we still have 15 minutes left. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking with attorney Dennis Pappas of Vassiliadis Pappas Associates. And we are discussing the essential components of an estate plan. Dennis's firm has frequent seminars on various topics around elder planning, and I'm sure they discuss estate planning as well during that. And they have more information on their website at Law, V as in Victor, P as in Paul, or Vassiliadis Pappas. LawVP.com information is available there. Dennis, we can talk about estate planning for hours and hours. There are so many nuances, so many different paths, and that's why it's really, really important for everyone to understand that your situation is unique to you. When we talk with our friends, our neighbors, we listen to programs like this, we listen to or watch TV, we watch self-help videos on YouTube, that does not always have all the answers. Those tools in the toolbox that Dennis talks about, it's how we use those tools are very specific and unique to yourself. So we want to make sure that you understand that. The biggest motive we have tonight is to educate people, because this is so important, because I will tell you that we do see cases where someone has not done what they need to do. And whatever is holding you back from moving forward, the goal is to find a way to move past it. And we're hoping that kind of simplifying it and changing the name from estate plan to care plan will open that door for you. We had Cliff from New Jersey, Dennis, who called in, and he asked if you could repeat what the core four is. And when you repeat the core four, talk about that one last one we didn't talk about yet.
Core four, our last will and testament for after somebody passes away, financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and a living will. And those last three are while a client is still alive. Just quickly on a living will, again, sometimes this is smushed in with the healthcare power of attorney, but it's a separate concept. This is end-of-life decision-making. If somebody is terminally ill or permanently unconscious, they cannot communicate with the medical professionals, the living will effectively says, I don't care what it costs, I don't care what it takes, I want medical treatment for the purpose of getting better, to restore the quality of my life, to get me back up on my feet, to get me back home. I don't care what it takes. That's what I want. However, I do not want medical treatment if it's just artificially going to prolong the process of my dying and otherwise extend that. And that's the general concept. We can, you know, talk another time about the details of the living will. One of the variables or things we also discuss in the living will are organ donation preferences. Do you wish to be an organ donor? If yes, transplant only for medical study, for medical research. Do you care for your cadaver at Temple University Medical School? So Living Will kind of deals with those end-of-life decision-making issues. But I know, Lori, we wanted to, I think, talk towards the end here on when should somebody consider either doing an estate plan or updating an estate plan?
Right.
I think that's
right. So we've talked about the components. We've talked about half the population not really having an estate plan or the estate documents they need. And we've just talked about all the importance of why we want those estate documents. We can't make assumptions that our estate is taken care of. There are a number of times people will say, I have everything non-probate. We don't need the will. And they forget that they got a lawsuit or they had some account accidentally end up in the estate when they thought they had a named beneficiary. So we know those people need to do the estate planning. But a lot of people say, hey, I don't even need to listen to this. I've already done my estate planning. Let's talk about the error in judgment on that. What could happen in your life, for example, Dennis, that could change that someone would have to update their estate plan?
Now, Lori's smiling. My wife and I were blessed with a little baby boy about 2 weeks ago. So that would be a classic. Yay.
And you're still so sharp tonight, even despite sleepless nights. You're still very sharp, Dennis.
I have a great wife who bears the brunt of it in the evenings. Yeah. She knew, oh, you're going on Lori's show tomorrow. You could sleep a little bit, a couple extra hours tonight. Yeah. But yeah, new family members. You know, so now I need to think about, it's my first child. I need to make sure I have a good minors trust. I need to make sure I have guardians appointed in case something happens to my wife and I. Those are something to think about. Change circumstances, and we always tell clients, when your estate plan is done, keep us in mind if you have changed circumstances. We talked before, and I know you've talked on this show, about tax laws. The federal estate tax used to be a big problem. A lot of people, not a lot of people, but more people used to be in a federal estate tax environment when the limit was $600,000. We're at $11.2 million in change per spouse. Most people don't have a federal estate tax issue. So I do have a fair amount of clients that come in and they have these wills from 15 years ago. And they're these, you know, pretty complicated, convoluted wills that have, and you're smiling because you're going to know this. There's a trust that if the first spouse dies and there's the A trust and the B trust, and you're doing all of this stuff on the death of the first spouse to avoid paying federal estate tax. Well, guess what? You know, I think it's less than 1% of the population nationally is going to owe any type of federal estate tax. Most people don't have $22.4 million in total gross assets. So, you know, a lot of times we're actually cleaning up the wills. Let's get rid of all this. A, B, you just need a regular, what we call a spouse will. I call them I love you wills. Mm. Honey, I love you. I'm going to leave everything to you. Mm-hmm. Oh, honey, that's cute. I'm going to leave everything to you. And then the kids in equal shares. I mean, so a lot of times it's simplifying the estate plan. So change circumstances on tax, change circumstances on health. We get the call all the time, Dennis, mom or dad not doing so well, early stage Alzheimer's. They moved into a personal care home. They're in a nursing home. We're paying $15,000 a month. Whoop, you better come on in here because we need to do some changes to that estate plan. We talked about changing the deed, for example. Classic estate planning for a married couple when one spouse is in the nursing home. Age, you know, my wife and I, classic, right? We did our wills 30 years ago when we had our first child. All of the kids are out of college. They're in their, you know, mid-30s on their first job. We need a different will. We don't care about guardians anymore. What do we care about? Oh, you have to, how are the three kids doing? Well, now that you ask, you know, the one child's got a lot of student loan debt. The other child's on a rocky marriage. Third child's doing great, but they're not married. They don't have kids. You know, they're doing the professional thing. Okay. You know, so now we have just different issues that we really, really need to talk about. We've mentioned law changes, at least in the tax, you know, tax in the realm of taxes. So the federal estate tax law was one of the big changes.
But certain legislative changes could affect the power of attorney as well, because sometimes people think because they have a financial power of attorney, they can do everything for that person. You mentioned earlier it has to be spelled out, but there's even with the recent changes in Pennsylvania, there's really specific directions that have to be spelled out in the power of attorney, as I understand.
Yeah, and I'll even give you one that I just saw an email on the other day very quickly. There was a court case that came out that said that the agents under power of attorney could not sign the paperwork necessary for their parent to get divorced. And I don't want to get too detailed into it, but you can imagine a situation where there might be a parent in a nursing home and there might be a legal reason for there to be a divorce. And the court said, no, you can't use the power of attorney to get your parent divorced. Only the parent themselves can do that. Well, if the parent doesn't have mental capacity, we have a problem. Now, there's technical reasons why I don't agree with that court opinion, but, you know, it got me thinking. And I went back and I looked at our power of attorney documents in our data banks. I'm like, well, do we have that power in our powers of attorney? And we do, but, you know, just those are examples where there's just things that are changing. Other considerations, what if people want to add or delete people from an estate plan? I had named my dear friend Lori as my agent under power of attorney, and I named my partner George as the backup. Lori moved out to the West Coast. She retired. She has health issues. You need to update your power of attorney because you might have an awesome power of attorney, right? You came to somebody like us and we did the Cadillac power of attorney, but now the person that you named is either unavailable, they passed away, they're in jail, you had a falling out. So there might be reasons. The other reason might be is I name you, I want you to be my agent, but something happened to my backup. Well, I don't effectively have a backup anymore. If my backup agent passed away, I'm really only left with one layer of defense. So now's a good time to think about, do we want to add a backup? Changing beneficiaries, we talked about. We get this all the time.
But something that can happen with beneficiaries, if someone has not coordinated their estate planning, sometimes they've named particular beneficiaries maybe in their will, and they say, oh, I'm not worrying about daughter Susie because I've taken care of her through putting her as a beneficiary on a life insurance policy. Well, the life insurance policy might have been a term policy that's all gone now, and they hadn't factored that in, and they really didn't mean to take Susie out. So,
or same, you know, I had this the other day. And you probably see this all the time. I named a certain person as the beneficiary of my retirement asset. But when I was 50 years old, now I'm 80 years old. I've been taking my required minimum distributions, and it's not $1 million IRA anymore. That's going to my beneficiary. It's a $430,000 IRA.
Right.
So when you start to put some of the numbers on paper and you show, well, this is where things are going, you reevaluate your estate plan. So I think I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but I think those are some of the major reasons why you want to look at your estate plan. If you don't have anything like that, it might be a good idea, you know, don't hold me to this, but what, every 5-10 years, you know, probably not more than 10 years. I think that's a long time. And then, you know, look, I have parents too. I understand about fees. I'm conscious about that. You know, certainly you're not going to come into the attorney every year and say, hey, you know, I need to substantially change my estate plan. I get that, but it's just be cognizant of that. The other thing is, do you know where your estate plan is? Do you physically know where the documents are? Because I have people say, yeah, I have a will and a power of attorney, and we did all this 10 years ago. And I say, okay, can I take a look at them so I could see what you had? Maybe what you had is perfectly great, and you don't have to do anything, which is nice because I'm not going to charge you any new fees. You know, Lori's smiling because she's like, do attorneys ever really say that? Yeah, we do. I mean, you know, I'm trying to make friends, not enemies. And if I can save somebody money in the long run, it's good business, right? So what happens if you don't have your estate plan? If you can't find your documents? If you only have copies of something? In many cases, you might just need to redo your estate plan to get it back in writing. I can't find my original will. I only have a copy. That's a problem.
Or sometimes people will think, well, the attorneys have it. But then 10 years later, they have died and they don't have their papers in the desk at home. The kids have no clue who the attorney is. So that's another way they sometimes can't find them.
Or a client has their original documents from 10 years ago, and maybe 5 years ago they pulled them out and they were making all these notes and changes on their original documents. And they bring them in and you're like, wait a minute, you just marked up all your original documents. And the client, oh, you know, they don't realize that they feel bad. It's like, okay, we'll keep everything the same. Let's just get an, you know, witness and two notaries, and let's get them in here and do it.
Yeah.
That's another, you know, I'm not sure, you know, Lori,
yeah,
let me know.
One minute.
One last thing I'll mention on that is, you know, witnesses and notaries. People might have older documents, or maybe it was a solo practitioner who didn't have enough staff and there weren't two witnesses and a notary. Is it legally required on, for example, something like the will? No. But when you go to use the will, for example, if you don't have the witnesses and it's not notarized, something we call self-proving, it's going to take a lot more legwork. You're going to have to hunt down those old witnesses. You might have to get statements from new witnesses. So a lot of times when I'm looking at documents, I'll tell the why am I telling the client to bring in the deed, for example? They say, Dennis, we want an estate plan. Why do you want to see my deed? Sometimes I look at a client's deed and it was never recorded.
Mm.
So we're trying to look at the whole picture there, but
Dennis.
Save more for next time.
We could go on and on. And next time, Dennis, why don't we have you on again, maybe in a few months, and talk about some of the other estate planning issues around life insurance, disability insurance, liability insurance, special need issues. There's just so much to cover. And you're a wealth of knowledge, awesome. And we appreciate it. So, again, those seminars are posted on your website, lawvp.com. And your phone number, Dennis, real quick?
610-694-9455.
Dennis, thanks so much. You're wonderful to have. I appreciate you coming. Shondi, thanks for being here. Lori, thanks for being in the Pledge Central, taking those calls. Thank you, listeners, for pledging and participating and supporting us here at WDIY and the station. We really appreciate it. Next week, we have a pre-recorded show, Cybersecurity and Identity Theft. I will be back the following week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
Thank you, Lori. And if you miss any of the program tonight, you can go to WDIY.org and click on Your Financial Choices. You're listening to WDIY Allentown. It's 7 o'clock. Your current temperature is 57. Coming up next, we have more NPR news and lots of great music right here on WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio.